It's you
And
and
there
me,
he is.
Stephen.
He's gone. Yep.
Yeah, and bring in Johnny, John McCann, will you please?
John McCann?
Yeah, he'll come in.
Okay.
Yeah, that's hilarious. What do you reckon? Isn't he wonderful?
Yes.
He's so good. I told John McCann he wasn't allowed to come in because he talks more than I do. Bring in.
There he is,
Are
Joe.
you there, Johnny?
I am. Yes. I'm here. I'm here. I wasn't expecting to be called at this late stage, but there you go.
Sorry. You could see there was no way of getting everything in. You know what I
Kids.
mean? Like you told me, he will take up all the time.
Absolutely. We have to get Bob back on again. He's refreshing to listen to. you did very well, of course. And so many subjects you tried to cover there. You're not going to do it in an hour, you
I'm an
know.
idiot.
I didn't
I
say
know I'm an idiot.
that at all.
I know. No, that's all right.
It's very interesting, the things that he did say about the bargain, and basically he's confirming what a lot of us are thinking anyway, as regards to the Vatican and Catholicism and all that sort of stuff, and Christianity as a whole. And as regards the sovereign thing, we can talk to him about that again. I think he's well on clued into it. He just didn't put a name on it, you know what I'm saying? And I'm sure he'd be very interested in the historical nature of Ireland and the true history of the sovereign nation from 1919 to 1922 only. And that's going to be great to explore that with him. It's great to see Finn trying to have a chat with him. As
Well,
I
I asked Vin on the side. I just said, "Look, would you want to come in?" He said, "No, not today, but in the future, I might be interested." So,
Sure, yeah.
yeah.
Bob obviously is a very busy man, and
Yeah.
but this is a great opportunity here on the radio for him to reach a new audience or new people to find out what he's doing, and for also for him to find out what we're doing. And I think what from what I can glean from what he's doing, it's not much different than what we're doing anyway, except the difference is he's a priest. Although albeit they want him to retire and all that sort of stuff, and
Oh, he's
it
already retired. They kicked him out.
obviously.
Yeah, no, he's been retired a couple of years. He's now set up a new thing called the Father Bob, or the Father Bob Foundation, or the Bob Maguire Foundation, and
Right.
it has an office. And in fact, he employs a lot of people. He has a lot of food vans that go out over Melbourne, and he has in the church. He used to have this community garden that was put in by Friends of the Earth. And so he attracted a lot of very new age people. Yeah, no, he's got a finger in so many pies, it's just not funny.
Exactly. He didn't go into, he does the youth training and stuff like that. He works a lot with young people and stuff like that. He's done an
Well,
awful lot
actually,
over his lifetime. And I think, what he was talking about and what you were trying to touch on too was probably the second coming, if you want to call it that, but definitely a wave of consciousness. And it's a breath of fresh air to hear someone from the Catholic side of things or in that institution, let's say, to be coming at it from the same angle. And really, and to say that we're all in it together,
I
which is
know.
fantastic to hear, and which is what it really is about, that we're all, there's only us here, there's nobody else here,
Well, I just love it, and that's my theme song, which we might even go out on, Stephen. To segue between you and me, what do you reckon, Stephen?
Joe, we might, I don't know, you might just want to stay on because I can't get a hold of my guest again.
Oh.
I don't know if he's going to show up again or not.
All right, well, why don't we play We're All in This Together? You stay here, Johnny, and I'll stay here.
I played that to begin with.
You were meant to play the
I
Catholic
didn't
one.
have the time.
Oh, you mean old man. All right.
No, do you guys, being Australia and the US, you've only got one tune.
No,
Ugh.
no,
No, it's
no.
not Stephen's fault. I sent it to him yesterday.
Father
It's just
Bob
that.
didn't get here until like, what, 30 seconds before we went on air or something, Joe?
Yeah,
It
that's
just
hard. We had to ring his mobile,
sounded
too, or something.
anyway. Oh, I can't believe I was quoting a song we didn't even play. Look, I've sent it to you, John. What do you think of it? Do you want to? Have you still got it on
It's
the
lovely.
screen
Yeah,
for
no,
us?
play it. Go for it. Just go for it.
Why
You
don't you
know.
hand it over to Stephen and let him play it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty soon, anyway. Have you got the link there, or will I go and get it
No, I
again?
haven't got anything here, Jill.
All right, I'll go to our conversation. Here it is here. This is oh dear me. Okay, so here it is, Stephen.
Live radio.
Yeah, it is live radio. This is a really clever thing. Because I'm really into, I want everybody to become personally enlightened and in love with their communities. And this is what I've discovered about Ireland. It had this guy called St. David. And he was, and here we go, Stephen. Let's play this about seeing our own holiness.
That's 10 minutes long.
Oh, that can't be the song then. I must have sent you the wrong thing.
That says Billy Maguire, Keeper of the Sovereign Seal.
Oh, no. No, I've been trying to learn about Billy Maguire. No, sorry. No, no, that's not the one. Oh, cracky molly. This song for our show. What's this one here? Paloma Faith? No, no, no. Stephen. Come on, Sean, you can talk. I mean, John, you talk nonstop.
Oh, no,
you talk while I look.
Let's see if we can find this. For
Do you see who's holding that flag in the background?
I've got it. Here it is. Here, I've got it. It's called what, darling?
Do you see who's holding the flag in the background of that video?
He's rather tall, isn't he?
Uh huh.
Yes. And he's bald isn't he?
Yes.
Tall and bald. If only I could hear his voice or something. That might help.
Don't think he speaks in that video.
I beg your pardon?
Don't think he speaks in that video.
Oh, I wonder who it is. And it's the Italian flag. What's he doing holding an Italian flag for?
It's not
Italian.
He
must be Irish. I know. Is it the Irish flag?
Do you want to play that song now?
Yeah, let's play it now. And everybody, let's listen. I love this song. I just love it. From a Buddhist perspective, it's top notch.
All right, don't forget. Everyone has to mute.
Okay, off we go.
Okay.
Yeah. You sound not very well, Jill. I knew you were practicing that all day.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we might as well just stay on here, Jill.
Today.
My guest isn't showing up again.
I'm still plugging my earphones in at the moment, so you guys had better talk among yourselves. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Stephen Roberts. Thank you, April Rain on April Rain's We Were Radio. Thank you, every wonderful person who I'm really growing very fond of it. People's Internet Radio, and welcome world to Australia Internet Radio, which will be streaming People's Internet Radio, or vice versa, I can't remember, and who knows what else. So thank you, everyone. And now please speak while I make a cup of tea, because I've finished. I'm doing a Father Bob. I'll be back in a second. I'm going to bless the kettle.
Well, okay. Yeah, we might as well just stay on here, John, if you want.
Yeah, why not? Okay, not a bother.
Don't have my guest again for some reason. Hey. Second time in a row with this guest here, so I don't know.
He's a ghost instead of a guest.
Ghost instead of a guest, huh? Yeah, well, we could probably play that Billy Maguire video, that Keeping of the Sovereign Seal.
Well, I was talking to Gillian earlier, and it's something that she hasn't heard about, I suppose, and all about the sovereignty and Sovereign Seal and Billy Maguire. It was just... I was telling her she was having Bob Maguire on, and I was saying another famous man here in Ireland, Billy Maguire, and it would be great to pass on that information to Bob Maguire, and pass on that information to anybody who wants to hear it. I think it's very important. It's part of what we are. It's part of everything that's going on and has gone on before.
But it's a bad video, so you can't play it. I've just got to cut across.
It's a bad video.
It's not television quality.
Well, this
isn't
television.
Can we bring Barbie in with us? Can you accept Barbie too?
Sure. She wants to come in.
All right, bring Barbie in. I'll get her to ring you.
No, it's okay. I'll just bring her in.
Oh, okay. Well, go and grab Barbie. She wants to come by the look of it.
Barbie having a Barbie.
Yeah, I know. She's had a Barbie. People made those jokes about Barbie very politely in the chat box. Okay, go on, keep talking.
There's Barbie.
Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Barbie.
She said you wanted to come on, huh?
Hello, John.
Hello, Barbie Ron Dracek. Would you like to go to pictures? We're all frozen.
She's doing her picture.
Oh, she's just ridiculous. Turn your picture off, you bloody darling gorgeous thing.
Where is it? Where is it now? Is that it?
All right, Barbie, this is Johnny.
Yes, I love to meet Johnny. I've been listening to his gorgeous accent.
Oh, so you much.
Somebody's got their player on.
Johnny on sovereignty.
Yes, sovereignty. It's a big thing. Well, Bob was talking about it, and Gillian was asking about sovereignty, and he has a take on it. But it's a very simple thing, really. And I'm sure if you heard it, and when you hear it, it is very simple, that when you're born sovereign. It's as simple as that. And you come into the world with all your God-given qualities and intact, your personality, your IQ, your abilities, your senses, your intelligence, everything. You come in quite pure. And from then on in, it's taken away from you by the state or states through access through the birth certificate. Then you become some sort of a citizen and part of a corporation. But we're all born sovereign. And with all our faculties in thing, and then someone tries to own us for the rest of our lives, and we play along with that game. And the Catholic Church, through its baptismal thing, owns you through that as well, under the pretext that if you get baptized when you're a baby, that you're going to be saved and go to heaven. Whereas the Christian movements would say that, you know, you were, as it does say in scripture, yeah, you should be born again. And that's why they get baptized when, as they're adults, because they're making that choice.
I'd like to interrupt here. I agree with everything you're saying so far. And I'd just like to take it, agree with you. But I'd also like to add, the importance of, we have this terrible fear, don't we, that we don't want to, about our sovereignty. Well, I'm a bit lost, but I'm just determined to butt in. the sovereignty bit, we're born sovereign, and if everybody would see us as sovereign and see each other as sovereign, then we'd have no more problems.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's my point. So it's about recognizing, Barbie, it's about recognizing the sovereignty in the other, which is what you and your beloved Teddy are always working on. Barbie's actually, well, she was a Quaker, but she's now some strange.
My grandmother was a Quaker, yep.
Well, see, there you go. We're all something, you know.
Yeah, but it's about recognizing that beauty in it, that divine being in each other.
We're all born sovereign. Yes. And I was born into the Catholic thing. Barbie was born into the Quaker thing. You know, Steve, I'm not sure. You were born in, Jill yourself, probably into the Christian thing. You've torn
Church of England. Yeah.
Hey, Barbie.
Yeah. You've torn Buddha now and, you know, whatever.
Hey,
Barbie. But like, this is the thing. You were born sovereign. The only people that were taking care of you were your parents. And you came in and, as you know, every child that's born is very special. You know, we all love to see babies born. We all think our children are special, which they are. To actually be born is very special, because if you go through the biology of it all, the simple biology of it all, you know, there's millions of sperm and only one mates with the egg.
That's right. You've already overcome huge obstacles to win, to be born.
Hey, Barb. Exactly. Hey, Barb. Aren't you glad your grandparents and your parents weren't Shakers instead of Quakers?
I got Shaker part.
No, do you know what was? Do you know what a Shaker was, Barbie?
After we're born, then all these labels are attached to us. Yeah. You know, depending on where you come from in any community in any particular country. So we come out on this, you know, from the maternity ward, and someone puts a sticker on us, and the government puts their sticker on us. The pharmacy people start injecting the babies now, and they put their stickers on them. They could be putting microchips in them for all we know at this point. And then we go, when we live in community, we grow up, we go to a school, we either go to a Catholic school, Protestant school, a Quaker school, Buddhist school, whatever. And they're telling us that this is the way it is, blah, blah, blah. And it's only when we become adults and we can make a choice for ourselves. Being in the Catholic faith, as it were, growing up for all those years, I never read the Bible. We were never given a Bible. We were given prayer books. We were given, we were told, in fact, you were talking about the Eucharist. When we were making our communion, we were told that, you must, stick out your tongue, and the priest would place it on your tongue. You were never allowed to handle it. It's only in the last 20 years that you're allowed to actually handle it yourself. And that was a big breakthrough, I suppose. And that you couldn't even let it touch your teeth. And we were all these pious little children, and we were going up holding our hands, you know, in whatever. And you had to be very good, and the nuns were particularly very strict about all this kind of stuff, which has nothing got to really do with what Bob is saying about taking the Eucharist, which represents the bread and wine, which is basically sharing and breaking bread with other people. You know, that's the significance of it. We're not told these things. So we go through lives, and when I was growing up, the Mass was said in Latin. It wasn't said in English or Irish, actually. They changed it then into English, and then they had an Irish Mass as well. but only the people who could speak Irish kind of went to the Irish Mass. I don't know whether they still have an Irish Mass.
John?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. Okay.
Hey, Barbie.
Yeah.
Do you know what a Shaker was?
What is that?
Well, a Shaker was a celibate Quaker. That's a true fact. And they, yeah, well, they all died out. That's why I said it's a good thing you're, oh, Jill. Well, I got a few seconds here. That's the truth, Jill. It's not any kind of a joke, okay?
But why were they called Shakers?
Because they were sexless Quakers. They were celibate Quakers. Anyways, while I got a few seconds here, I need to tell everybody to stay tuned for Mike and Christiane coming up in about 40 minutes or 45 minutes, somewhere around in there. And I think Corey's coming up at midnight. So, no, that's the truth, Jill. That's no lie.
I know, but they had a good sense of humor, didn't they?
Whole lot of shaking going on.
He's so funny. He's just
I don't understand any of the service if it was in Latin, or I'm not sure if he understood Gaelic, but makes it pretty not easy to understand or feel a part of.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, yeah,
that's
and that
the
was
whole
the thing.
I think now, sorry, Jill, for cutting across. We should have little buzzer stump. I would speak, Jill speak, or whatever we have. But that's exactly it. Was it just to keep us from the truth? Keep us from keep us from reading the Bible. You know, because it kind of certainly looks like it, because if you read scripture, and I'm not professing any faith over any other thing here, but if you read scripture, the first thing you realize about it is that everything that the Catholic Church has been doing, it tells you in scripture not to do. Like, not to pray to statues and false idols and, you know, all of these things it tells you, which is kind of a shock when you read it, to be quite honest with you.
Well, yeah, I think the real communion is between you and God. That's what we're all aiming for. And everything that separates us, all these religious ceremonies that try to separate us and keep the power with them and keep us away from our own personal experience of oneness with the Creator.
Hey, Barbie.
Yeah?
Do you have your radio player on?
No, sweetie.
Somebody does. I'm hearing it in the background. John, you got your radio off?
No. Yes, I have it off, yes.
Somebody has their radio.
Probably me. How's that?
That sounds good. Okay.
My ignorance. Pardon me.
Come on, Barbie, you were saying?
Yeah.
No, I just think that, you know, what I've learned in life is that, you know, you get all these sort of people that want to step in between you and the Creator and God and tell you these things. And in the end, you get to a certain age and you go, no, hang on a minute. I want direct communication with the Source. I'm over all this third party carry on. And then when you talk about what the church does as far as putting themselves on a pedestal and saying that the only way to God is not through the Lord, but through them, you just think, oh, hang on a minute, that's got to be something wrong with that theory there.
Mm. Well, this is what was so beautiful about the old Celtic islands. They came from that phase where they were druids, where they were really connected with nature. Yeah. And rambling and ambling and wandering was one of the most important things for them to do. Just going out, and that eudaimonia that the Greeks talk about, being at one with nature. Mm. I've just realized, yeah, go on.
Oh, just that beautiful quote about, you know, there's nowhere else in the world that you're closer to God's heart than in a garden.
I popped a link in the chat there, Jill.
I'm reading it. United Society of Believers in Christ, second appearing known as the Shakers, is a religious sect founded upon the teachings of Anne Lee. Shakers today are most commonly known for their cultural contributions to masturbation. No, I'm sorry, I just...
Oh, you terrible woman.
I'm so naughty. No, especially their style of music and furniture, celibate and communal lifestyles, and their model of equality of the sexes, which they institutionalized in their society. So when you said Shaker, I imagined them shaking with sexual frustrations. And that's why I couldn't stop laughing, because I was imagining them, like, in all sorts of ways, but particularly just standing there, just shaking with frustration. I mean, the celibacy thing is such a difficult thing. And for the, you know, originally I'm sure celibacy was instituted so that people could not have to, you know, because families, especially when you have, you know, get pregnant, I mean, it's a full-time job being a father or a mother, isn't it? Like, it's full-on having kids to look after. So, Johnny, you and I were talking about this yesterday, weren't we?
You were. That was yesterday. You're yesterday, my today.
Yes. We're talking about how, yeah, you can't have families. Yeah. And
I think the idea of celibacy came about because you were to give yourself everything towards the mission, you know, your goal participating in the church, which kind of made sense, you know. I don't think it's actually mandatory, but it's a voluntary thing, really, although they can't get married and stuff. But that didn't stop some of them finding partners and having children and all that sort of stuff. And at one stage, I think one of the popes was actually married. So I suppose over centuries, different centuries, we come across certain ways of thinking. And I think the last century, not the 19th, but the 19th century, not the 20th century, the middle of that, where we had the genocide here in this country. Shortly after that, you had the Civil War in America to free slavery. And but you also had all these societies coming up, like the Fabian societies, Darwinism and everything else. And so there was a big upheaval in thinking, but you still had the imperialism of the crown around the world at that time, which you still have today, except that it's not as upfront. And that's what's exactly happening with the Vatican and Rome. Their power is dwindling through their activities of paedophilia and everything else. People are turning away in disgust at this kind of thing. And, so I suppose it's leading in turn then naturally to people thinking, okay, do we really need these people to tell us these things? Just like what Barbara's saying and what we're all kind of saying, even what Bob is saying. And likewise, do we need governments to tell us what we need to be doing? And are we anarchists for not wanting a government? Are we anarchists for not wanting a church? You know, in scripture, it says you don't have to go to a building. It says if you want to pray, just go into a room and lock your door and pray. You know, so you don't need a church, but the word church is what, as Bob said, you know, he said, like, we sit down and he said, if I give you the bread, and that is the church, you know, it's a church of two people. That is a church. It doesn't have to be a structure, a building. I suppose it's handy to have a particular place for people to go to. But other than that, what they did was they took over. Ireland's history as regards to the Catholic Church is, and Britain's, UK as well, and most of the world, is fascinating if you go through the successive kings and queens of Britain. Elizabeth was particularly one that I came across recently, where she was in love with this chap, and but she was a Protestant, and the church didn't want her taking over. So there's lots of toing and froing and all the rest of it. And the Queen died and she took over. She discovered that this guy that she was in love with was married already. Although everybody else knew it, I don't know how she didn't know it. However, she decided then to get her power and to rule in a certain way. She had to become like something divine, which all these power freaks do. The Romans did it. They always thought that they were divine and that they were to be looked up as gods, and the same with the crown in certain aspects. But she decided, and it was suggested to her, that if she became like the Virgin Mary, which is kind of turning things on its head, because Protestantism doesn't recognize the Virgin Mary as the Mother of God. But she decided to become like the Virgin. She was known as the Virgin Queen. Yeah. So for 40, she didn't marry. But that was just a ploy for people to think that she was some sort of deity, yeah, in the sense of the feminine and Mary, the Mother of Jesus. So that's kind of interesting. So they'd do anything to hold on to power and for to focus and get things. But apparently that was a great period of time in Britain, and they called it the Golden Years or something, the Golden Age, when she was there. She reigned for 40 years then after that. Of course, Ireland's history in relation to Britain is fraught with all sorts of stuff for 800 years, and we still have them, except we don't think that we have them, because we had a treaty in 1922 that said we became a free state, but we became nothing of the sort. We became a virtual independent dominion of the Commonwealth, is what we became.
ERA
doesn't exist anymore, Barbara.
Right, okay.
And they changed it to the free state. They changed, right. And Ireland is the English, so-called English word for ERA. Well, it isn't really. It doesn't translate like that.
No, it doesn't. Okay.
And in 1922, we became known as the Free State. And that was the Free State until 1948, when our Taoiseach of the time, which was a provisional government since 1922, came into being under the Crown in the Constitution of 1922, under the Anglo-Irish Treaty of 1921-22, in Section 17, is that each member of the government has to swear an oath of allegiance to the King and all his successors.
Okay.
And
my mother was very much Aaron Gobra, up the rebels.
Well, yeah, I suppose when you do talk about these things, people think about rebellion and all sorts of things. So Mr. Billy Maguire is the president of the IRB, which is the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And the Irish Republican Brotherhood started a very long time ago. And Billy's family, the Maguires, they were merchants who lived in the Thames. But they funded a lot of the fund. They put forward a lot of the funding for the 1916 Rising. And the IRB was the initial thing. Then it turned into, there was sections of it. There was a volunteers and there was a couple of other bodies that stemmed from it. Sinn Féin was one of them. And in 1918, there was a 30, all-Ireland election. 32, Ireland was always, even under the British, was 32 counties. And it wasn't until 22. Anyway, in 1918, there was an all-Ireland 32 county election and Sinn Féin got the majority of seats. And through the Irish Republican Brotherhood and all its influence and various other things and all those players at that time called for Ireland's independence on the 24th of January in 1919, which was recognised by India at the time and some other, I think Russia as well, and some other countries. That's why India's flag is the same colour as Ireland's flag. Ireland's flag, green, white and orange, is not the green Irish piece with the orange, which was Protestantism. The Irish flag is green, white and orange, which represents the lily, the flower of the lily, which is a green stem, a white petals and an orange bud.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But they put the spin on it to say that it was peace between Protestantism and Catholic. Yeah. And they used that division between Protestants and Catholics throughout the history of Ireland. Even if you go back further, where Cromwell invaded Ireland. Cromwell, if he was alive today, he would have been probably as popular today because he wanted to get rid of the monarchy. And Cromwell, and he actually did, they beheaded King Charles the Fourth, I think. And he then set about coming over to Ireland to get rid of it, to change the people's mindset in Ireland. It wasn't just to kill the Irish people. But what happened was the Catholic Church and the Protestants joined together to fight for the king against Cromwell.
Ah, very interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So if that happened today and somebody was to get rid of the monarchy, he would be a Democrat, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my ancestors was one of Cromwell's officers, and that's how he got his land or his houses or whatever. And I used to always be very ashamed of that. I didn't realize that he actually was against the monarchy. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, he's actually hated in Ireland because...
I know. My mother was always ashamed of that side of the family.
Well, you see, it's something I didn't know until I looked into it.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you come onto this radio. You start having to look into things because you have the responsibility of telling stories and telling things to people as an audience, you know?
Yes, and, yes.
So I delved into it a little bit. And it is just very interesting. Yes, he came over and he committed atrocities, let's be honest about it. He did. But as I say, the Catholic Church, they met in Kilkenny, and the Protestants from the north joined forces against Cromwell. I think Cromwell was only here for 8 months or something, and they had a terrible time, all the soldiers, because it was constantly raining in Ireland, as it always does, and they were ill-equipped for this, and I think that winter was a particularly bad winter, and a wet winter, and they got all sorts of foot rot and stuff like that, and a lot of them died, and they could have actually been defeated at one point, but the fellow that was leading the charge for the Catholics and Protestants, the Irish, I don't know what it was, it was the churches, it wasn't the Irish. If they had destroyed a particular bridge, I can't remember where it was, they could have isolated his army and killed them off. But because of the guy that was running it was inept at what he was doing, he was a lord, such a body, you know. And he didn't know what he was doing. He wasn't really good at that, at warfare. It could have been stemmed before that, but that's by the by, you know. Right. And Cromwell hated Ireland. He thought it was a godforsaken land, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, going back to 1918, we had a 32 county, and Ireland was always 32 counties, even through Cromwell's time and before Cromwell's time. The British got their consent to come over here through a papal bull, through the Vatican again. But if you look through all British history, the Vatican, the Catholics or the Pope was always there. They couldn't do anything. Same with the kings and all the royalty around the world, Spain and everything. There was always a bishop or cardinal there with them who advised them. They always had that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it sort of shows the power of just claiming your own sovereignty. Like the royal families have claimed their sovereignty, but we haven't claimed ours.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they're telling us that the word sovereign means that they reign over people. So over rain, I think, is the interpretation they give it. And that's only because we people recognize it as that. And as well as that, they fool the people thinking that they're a direct descendant of David and that the royal bloodline right to Jesus, you know, or before. So, which they're not, apparently. And
I'm descended from a saint and a king. I've already told people this before. Saint Edmund from St. Edmundsbury on my mother's side. She's an Edmund. Anyway, that's all. But anyway, it's nothing to do with the point because but the point is, what did you say, Barbie?
Nothing, I was just talking about my Plunkett and hussy history.
Oh, you're a hussy, darling.
And a Plunkett.
And a
Plunkett.
Oh, my God, a hussy and a Plunkett.
I just love those names.
Are they interconnected?
Yes, they were in one side of the family, yep. In a cheeky, cheeky way, which I won't go into now.
It already sounds very cheeky.
It is, and it is.
I was actually saying to Stephen, I don't know, I'm just too naughty. I don't think I'll say anything. You just keep talking.
Yeah, we're all on the edge of our seats wanting a little more of that, what you were going to say.
So, where was I? 1919. Yeah, the election.
Don't let us detract you, John.
32 county All-Ireland election. It hasn't happened since. Because in 1919, we became a sovereign country, declared sovereign, etc. Of course, they deny that fact, but their denial is it doesn't wash because, you see, you can't have a treaty with something that doesn't exist. So why would the empire have a treaty with a country that they've already supposedly owned for 800 years and then come up with this treaty with this non-entity, which has called itself a sovereign independent country? So they did recognize it, and it was recognized around the world. In fact, on the 21st of January, at the ceremony, the turning of the sovereign seal, which takes place in the Mansion House, where the first real doll sat, the only doll that was ever there, sat in the Mansion House in Dawson Street. So, in 1922...
What is this sovereign seal? I want to know about this sovereign seal. It's got me fascinated. What is the sovereign seal?
Sovereign seal is the harp.
Oh.
You see?
Is it one harp or is it several harps?
It's one harp.
I thought it had a box and there was a seal and they dipped it in ink and then you went clunk and that was the sovereign seal.
Yeah. It's called the sovereign seal. Can't really explain that properly, but I'll explain something about the harp to you. You might find fascinating that the harp is not just about a harp as you think. It is a musical instrument, but the harp represents a covenant with God to the people.
Yes, it does.
And the strings on it represent the Trinity. The first three is the Trinity. The next ones are also, which is think, talk, and do. The next five are your senses.
Mm-hmm.
Your five senses. The next four are
the four elements.
Yeah, four elements, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 11 strings on the harp.
Oh, wow.
12 strings on the harp.
Wow.
And exactly. And not only that, but on the harp itself, if you see the sovereign seal, the harp, which is with air underneath it, and you will see on the side of it, it has various inscriptions. But from the harp, we're finding out, discovering through Billy Maguire, that if you look at it, the bow-shaped part of the harp, it's showing you how to make a boat. It's an acoustic instrument. It's an amplifier. It's also used for measuring. If you put the harp on the ground and use it for engineering, you can look it over the fields, and the farmers used to be able to do this and measure the height of their crops and determine to the near enough the yield that they were going to get from each crop that they were growing. If you get one of the strings or two of the strings and put one parallel or horizontal, then you're talking about the world's horizontal and parallel, that part of the world. It shows you how to navigate. It tells you about the stars. It helps you to measure things. It's all knowledge is in that. That's what it represents. All knowledge to mankind. Yeah.
And there's something about the head, the big fat part of the harp, the part that you hold next to yourself, I've forgotten the name of it, but someone who I won't name drop told me that. That it's something to do with the bulk part, the bulky bit, the hair, you know, the bit that's usually sort of, you know.
Closure, yeah. What is it?
I don't know. I can't remember that bit.
I can't remember myself. I'm just giving you a snippet of information about it. I don't know it all, but it's a window of something that I never knew myself. And lots of us didn't know about it until Billy Maguire had told a few people about it. And so they reckon that not only did they use the harp for engineering, for navigation, for gauging the stars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but it also helped them, if they used them in engineering, it helped them to build the pyramids, and it may have helped them, I was talking to someone today, that it may be in connection with building Stonehenge as well.
Oh, that's right. Well, because it was also a sextant, and that's what,
exactly.
Vin told me, and when they sailed the ships, they had the mast itself is an actual sextant, and in a way, a ship does look a bit like a harp, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
It's absolutely fascinating. So we're the only country in the world, you know, that has this kind of, thing to represent the people. It's the only country in the world that has a musical instrument, number one. And with all this information on it, and it's the information that's on that is probably the key to a lot of knowledge.
Which the information that's on it?
It's so ancient that perhaps, you know, the High Kings of Ireland weren't just ordinary kings. They weren't called High Kings for nothing. I can't be 100% sure about this, but they may have been higher kings than other kings previously known of. And it's probably that spirituality came from here rather than to here.
Well, that's just absolutely amazing, because that's right. This seems to be what you call Indigenous Irish.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with that. I'm really, really fascinated with you know, the Indigenous Irish.
Well, there's 4.5 million people here at the moment. Well, it's getting smaller by the minute because they're all going to Australia, all the young people. there used to be 4.5 million here. Going back to 1845 of what you know was here the famine, we call it now a genocide. It's been proven now more and more, but thank God that it's coming out that it was actually a genocide. And at that time,
when was the genocide?
1845.
Why are they all going to Australia for, John?
Work.
There's no work here.
No work in Ireland.
They're all our greatest comedians.
It's true. It's true.
My son is over in Sydney. He's working very hard. All the young guys that go over from here, all the tradesmen, the young people who are in trades, have gone over to Australia or Canada or Boston or, you know, generally speaking. And particularly all the trades people have gone there. And they're all working. It's very expensive in Australia. That's what they're finding out. They get big money compared to what they would pay here. But everything is so expensive that it's not as big as they think, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, rent in Sydney is phenomenal.
Yeah. But it's all relative, I suppose, you know, because what's happening is that our young people and educated people, or maybe not so educated, whatever, generally more educated these days, are going over to Australia. And we have in Ireland, lots of people are coming from Poland to here, you know. I'm not picking on the Polish people or anything like that. But what's happening is there's a population transference going on around the globe. So if you have someone, say, from Poland who is earning a couple of hundred quid a month, and they can come to Ireland and earn a couple of thousand, maybe, or whatever, and they'll do the jobs that the Irish people weren't doing during the boom times. So they come in and they work for less. And the Irish lads and lassies go off to Australia and they work for less than the Australians do. My son will get paid less than an Australian would be, even though he's doing the same work as an Australian. And so on it goes. And that's the way it works. So what they do is it all plays into the banker's hands and the powers that be's hands. And what's happening in Australia is there's a boom in the housing thing and the building thing, which is exactly what has happened in Ireland. The same thing happened in Ireland. The same thing happened in America. And it's all the same bubble that's going on. But the people in Australia don't reckon it's going to happen there because we're the same as the people in Ireland saying that Ireland was one of the richest nations in the world. And how brilliant are we? Before that, we were gum beans and gobshites and everything else until money comes into it and there's this fictional wealth created through a purposely planned thing by the banking fraternity done through the Fed and all these things. And the same is going to happen in Australia. because you can only build so many things. And while you have a huge migrant population coming in, yes, you do need people to be there. You need place for them to live and all the rest of it. When the bubble bursts and those migrants go away, you're left with all these things, buildings. So the banks come in then and grab all those buildings, well, like they're doing in Ireland, like they've done in America, like they're doing in England. And it's about an asset grab and power in robbing everything and having people. If you have people on welfare, well, then you can control them. So when you have people working and thinking that they're making money, they're harder to control. So if you have them on welfare, then you can tell them you're only entitled to so much, and this is what you must live on now.
Yeah, but I don't believe they deliberately put people on welfare for that purpose, because the thing is, the jobs have disappeared for so very, very, very many reasons. You know, computers, machinery, the mechanization has taken so many jobs from people, and we haven't created other jobs. But I don't think they just put them on welfare to control them. I think they're just incredibly uncreative as to what to do with people now that the sort of demographic of what things we can do for the earth are. Like, excuse me, I've just realized my voice sounds so loud because I'm actually in a corner, so my voice bounces off the wall, and that's why I always sound so loud, even including my cough. But the point I'm trying to make is, there's, you know, we could do so much in terms of land care and in looking after each other. I mean, I came up with this scheme when I was 15, that people, instead of being on the dole, could be going and helping old ladies, painting their fences, mending their houses. You know, we could have a whole community effort of people. And, you know, in Australia, they call that work for the dole and they don't like it. But I actually think, you know, if people are going to be supported by other people's taxes, and I think rich people should be taxed quite heavily because there's only a certain point, a certain amount of money that anybody needs, then we could be using that money for helping each other. You know, helping people who can't get a job. We'll say, all right, well, then we're going to pool these assets and we're going to pay for ourselves to help each other and not call it government funding, but call it pooled assets or something.
Yeah, well, you see, I think going back to what I was saying and what you're saying is that you don't think that these people would have people on welfare. What happens is, if you think about it, it's not just one thing that's happening. There's always three or four or five or six, seven different things happening at the same time. But if you look at globalization, it plays into the globalization packets where China makes all the goods, America does X amount, Britain does X amount, Germany does this. They all have their certain goals, and there's only a certain amount of companies and corporations running the whole world. You know,
and we're buying into it because we're not making our own food and our own electricity and doing a whole lot of grassroots sort of off the grid sort of activities.
Exactly, because you know, I see it on a micro level here, my local area here, which was a small village at one time when I was growing up, and there was two butchers in it, and now there's none.
Two what? Butchers.
Butchers, yeah.
Yeah, that's bad.
Why is that, John?
Pardon?
I said, so why is that?
Because it's a bigger community now than there was then. Why is that? Because everybody thinks we're kind of developing.
Right, at the supermarket.
The supermarket came in, did away with a lot of stuff. Now, my local area.
Well, we have supermarkets and we have butchers too.
Yeah, I know there are butchers. It's not, Ireland is not sort of bereft of butchers, but there certainly isn't the amount of butchers shops that there used to be, or small grocery shops that there used to be. The small grocery shops cannot maintain anything at the moment. They either have to put a post office unit into it or something like that, but they can't really make a good living out of it anymore. And the local, the Germans have come in with Lidl, or whatever you want to call them. And they moved into a small unit down the road. Now they're taking over all the other businesses. They're buying up, a pub was sold to them, I heard yesterday. They're taking over that pub. Those smaller units are going into what was the pub, with a new building. And the supermarket is extending to the rest of those units. And generally speaking, they are cheaper than the other supermarket, which is up the road, which was Irish owned, which has been taken over by a larger company that's supposed to be Irish, but I'm not sure whether they are or not.
So
their choices are limited all the time. And everybody says, oh, we go, well, why do we go down? Why do I shop down there? Well, because it's cheaper than going into the local shop. It's cheaper than going up to the other one. And then up the road, we have Tesco's. And there's a building up the road here. The locals call it the Sydney Opera House. The thing is that big, and it's a gigantic thing. It's an awful looking structure.
Does it echo like Sydney Opera House?
You know, sorry.
Does it echo like Sydney Opera House?
That was just a name which would be typical Dublin, putting names on things, and that's what they call it, the Sydney Opera House.
You know what happened over here in America, John? Things started getting tough, and the little mom and pop grocery stores kind of converted. Long time ago, they didn't used to have liquor or beer or anything in the stores, and then somewhere back in they started integrating the liquor stores with the grocery stores, and now even some places sell clothes. Some places have little sandwich shops, little cafes, little restaurants, and they're just trying everything they can to keep going. Yeah.
Well, going back through the years in Ireland, in the smaller towns and villages, there would be one shop. There was a number of shops, maybe. There would be a shop and a pub. One side would be the shop and the other side would be a bar. It wouldn't be like the pub, but, down the country. And there used to be what they call the huckster shop, which you could nearly buy anything in these small towns. In fact, Percy French wrote a tune, it's called, From Colliher. And From Colliher exists. And it's a story about him going over to London and calling on the king, you know, like knock, knock on the door. And the butler opens the door, and the butler, he says, I'm sorry, but he's not about, you know, but if you'd like to come in, sir, and have a look around, apartments like these are not what one sees in your country every day. And then Percy says to him, well, the mythical Percy says to him, have you ever been to Drumcolliher? Well, you haven't been to Drumcolliher. Well, in Drumcolliher, we have a very fine house there. And in the shop, basically the shop is there for bacon, hardware and tea. So he gave an image of, the butler in the palace was, condescending to him and saying, come in and have a look at this gloriousness that we have here. And he localized it into this little town called Drumcolliher. But there was one big house living there, but it's a fantastic song. Percy French, he was a genius. I diversify again. But where are we going with this? Yeah, globalization. So to think that these people, we thought the banks wouldn't do anything, that they were looking after our money, you know. We thought the church was looking after our children, our souls and everything else, our welfare and all the rest of it. We thought the politicians were there to help us. Well, in America, you know, the only thing that the government does in America is go to war nowadays with everybody else, you know. So the imperialism has gone from the crown, which is still the crown over there, but it's gone from looking on England to America. And they've just taken over the role in their imperialistic way. So as Larkin Rose says, why would you vote for somebody who can use violence and go and kill people and tell you that you can't use violence to defend yourself? And that's what people are voting now in America for. And I noticed too, Steve, most of the programs that you have on and your guests, a lot of the stuff centers around gun control and guns and 9/11 and wars with somewhere else. And, you know, and it's gone into the stage now where it seems to be normal for the American people to just think that war is a very natural thing. And that not only that, but where America is like Judge Dredd. You know, well, that's the police force, you know.
That's the way they're trying to make it, yeah. They're trying to condition people into accepting that way of life.
Exactly.
Wars aren't, well, George Bush said, maybe it was Dick Cheney, he said wars weren't, this war in Iraq wasn't meant to be won. It was just meant to be sustained.
Exactly.
And it was, I think it was... what was the guy's name? The general, or I think he might have been a colonel back in the 30s, said war's nothing but a racket.
Yeah.
Smedley Butler.
Who said that?
Colonel Smedley Butler. That's what it was.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's shown to be now that that's exactly what it is. Nothing else. And people are butchering each other and brainwashing the young men going into this. You still have advertisements here on Irish television, because we get the English channels, and inviting people to join the army, and it's an adventure, you know. And you can rock climb, and you can be the hero, you can be the macho man, you can be whatever.
Yeah, those commercials are still. I mean, those commercials are here too. Yeah,
yeah.
And
it looks very inviting, doesn't it, for young people to think that he could be sailing or.
Well,
captain, you know, of a ship or flying an airplane or, you know, and now they're feeding the young people games, you know.
It's, It's all presentable. It's all presented as glamorous to the young people, John. Nationalism is presented as glamorous to any country. You know, they attacked us. We have to go after them now because I don't know, because they attacked us.
Exactly. And if they don't attack us, we let on that they attacked us.
That's right.
It's got to that stage.
They attacked us, but we secretly provoked them to attack us.
Yes, but we don't know whether they actually did or not. You know, particularly right. 9/11.
Right.
And now, apparently, in Ukraine or Crimea, apparently the Russians shot some soldiers or something, and that may give the all clear now to go in and attack those forces that are in Crimea. But if you look into the history of Crimea and the negotiations and the treaties that they have there with Crimea, they're sort of an independent, semi-independent country, as far as I can remember, within the Ukraine. And I think Russia is legally able to have bases there and all the rest of it. But we're not hearing that on the media. All we're hearing is that Russia won't tolerate protesters, just like as if Dublin tolerate protesters or Britain tolerate protesters, except if you go out and protest about fracking or something, you'll be knocked over the head and sort of thing. But it's much more severe, apparently, in Russia. It's not as severe in England or in America or in Ireland, which is an absolute lie and deception. Because anybody that goes out and protests, we don't agree with protesting anyway. But anybody who goes out and protests in America are soon either water cannoned or beaten or battered. You don't have to protest in America, it seems to me. Looking at all the newsreels and the reports that some of the policemen over there seem to think that they're RoboCop or something now. And, you know, so they're utilizing movies to instill something. They're utilizing the games that children play to utilize for war, advertising for war, trying to make out that America is the high moral standing in the world, and every other nation is below them because they're either Muslim or they're something else, or they're Russian communists, you know. When in fact, if you look at the 10 planks of communism, most countries have 8 or 9 of those planks of communism already in them, and they're supposed to be democratic countries. So it's, to me, it's like an illusion by magicians who are manipulating the puppets, who are then in turn manipulating us by feeding us certain information at particular times.
Well, that's the whole point. That's the whole point, John. Their manipulations are meant to keep us in line. They're also meant to prop themselves up on the eternal pedestal. Because once we finally realize that we don't need these people, they become irrelevant and they are non-existent anymore.
Exactly, I agree totally.
If you want to step out of those paradigms, if you want to step out of the influence and effect of all of the bullshit that we're fed, both in the media and in our societies in general, you have to be willing to live a little harder. I mean, it's not, you know, we're so propped up by the things that we think we need and the things that we want. And so we're trying to get those things and we're searching for those things. But if you want to just really step out of it, and like when I went over to New Mexico last year for 3 months and lived off the grid, man, that, you know, there's no power, there's no water, running water. You know, you have to go a couple of miles and carry buckets of water, very sort of what we call third world standards in a way. But the wonderful thing was I was not run by those things I thought I needed anymore, that I'd been fed that I needed. No, yeah. You actually don't need any of that. And no, you're not no longer controlled by the government. No, they can't do anything to make you do what they want you to do because you're actually self-supporting in a whole new way that I hadn't even conceived of before.
Self-sustainable, yes.
Yeah, I lost 30 pounds just because of the work it required every day to do the things you have to do to survive. I'd never been healthier or happier, but man, it was a real paradigm shift, you know. It was no longer just nipping down to the shop to get this or to get that or no, you know, but I'd encourage everybody to consider stepping out of the mouse's wheel, you know, for a while to at least experience what that sort of freedom feels like and the way people band together and help each other in those sort of circumstances. And if you don't happen to have a meal, then your neighbor will make you a meal. And, it's, you know, it was wonderful. It was just so much such a revelation for me. I love this, the idea that of that sort of sovereignty coming back through grasping with both hands your own survival and not depending on the electricity company or the shop down the road or the whatever, you know. You just get out there and make your own life and be as humble and simple as you need to be and discover the joy that comes from that.
Hey, Barbie.
Yeah.
John and Jill, how about a little break here? We're at the hour.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Yeah, that's okay. We have about a 7-minute break here. Everybody can go boil them a pot of tea if they want. And
yeah, lovely.
Yay. Yeah. I'm just going to say that Mike and Christine are coming up in about a minute and a half, so I'm going to be losing my one feed, but I'm still going to be taping in that. And we're still on People's Internet Radio. We're on We Roar Radio, and we are also on Australian Internet Radio. You must have taken your headphones out, huh, Joe?
No, well, yes, which I invite everybody to join and to contribute to, please, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
All right. All right. And we're going to take that break.
Thank you.
All right. We're back, everyone. Do I have everyone back?
Yep.
Do I have you two ladies back now? Joe?
I am here, but I'll tell you, I've been
Yes. Go ahead, Barbie.
No, that's all right. It's just that I'm supposed to be cleaning this house that I'm staying in at the moment, and I've been enjoying playing truant talking with you all. But the dirty bathtubs are calling to me.
Yeah.
So I'll be here as long as I can, but I will have to nip off soon. But it's been fantastic chatting with you.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, I only have 54 minutes left in this show. Are your bathrooms still going to be dirty in 54 minutes?
Oh, you betcha.
Well, they'll still be there then, won't they?
Yeah, as long as the homeowner doesn't come back in the meantime.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Why they're not cleaned.
I see.
Anyway, don't worry. When's he due back, Barbie?
Not sure. He's a bit of an international man of mystery. And
getting an echo there, Jill.
His plane bookings don't mean a thing because, he tends to sort of have, you think he's coming back at a certain time and it'll just pop up unexpectedly. So I'm just trying to hedge my bets and make sure I give myself enough leeway in case of sudden arrivals.
Your earplugs are probably bothering you, aren't they, Jill? No. Okay. Well, she must have went off somewhere.
I'm here. I'm pathetically here.
No, your earplugs are bothering you, aren't they?
No. I'm not allergic to them at the moment, but I am allergic to metal. I have to get some proper headphones. So I have a metal allergy, everybody. I can only handle gold. Poor me. So if you want to cross my palm, it has to be with gold.
I heard that one before, all right.
Gold and diamonds, right, John?
Yeah, and I'm also allergic to rubber.
Rubber?
Yeah, condoms. What are they called?
Oh, okay.
You know, that stuff that you put on your plastic fingers on your hands. What's that stuff called?
Latex.
Latex.
Latex. Yes. I have a latex allergy too. And I didn't get it until late in life. And in fact, oddly enough, I was in India at the time and my boyfriend gave me an Indian bracelet, a silver sort of nickel sort of alloy thing, with On Mani Padme Hum written on it. Well, he was my ex-boyfriend. And I got this rash from it. And then after that, I started discovering I can't wear pierced ears, earrings unless they're gold. Everything has to be gold. It's the only one that... Oh, I can also handle stainless steel. Yes, surgical steel. I'm not allergic to that either. So there we have it. That's on a brand new topic, isn't it? So I'm allergic to latex and cheap wedding rings. And cheap earrings.
Well, wedding rings make me come out in a rush, too. So yeah.
That's terrible, John.
They do.
Well, Barbara was telling us all about her adventures.
Barbara's on an adventure. She's living in this extraordinary situation at the moment. And, the exact opposite to being off the grid. Barbie.
She's
driving an Aston Martin at the moment. Aston Martin. I thought only Prince Charles drove an Aston Martin.
Oh, I thought James Bond. I've been calling
James
myself.
Bond was, yeah.
That's right, James Bond.
Yeah, that anyway, I like that. But I was sharing the experience of living off the grid, which is what I'm heading back to do. I want to do, trying to convince the American government that I'm not going to be a drain on the American system. I'm actually going to live off the grid. I don't want anything from you. Just let me go there and live there and make my own way. But they want you to have a certain amount of money before they let you in to do things like that. But I was just sharing that experience of living off the grid with John and everybody and Stephen, because I was saying that it was a wonderful thing to experience that sort of freedom where you weren't dependent on the utilities or all the things that the magazines or television programs tell you that you need, or my own, you know, conditioned wants and things like that. It was actually much survival based and very liberating.
Well, when I was a teenager, went and we had a community farm and we had our own sheep, which we shore. I'm a good sheep shearer, anyone, if you ever want to hire me. I'll only take all day, but anyway, I don't cut.
Farrier as well. I've seen her doing her own farrier work. You'd all be very impressed with Jilly.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, and I could learn to spin, and then I could knit, and then I could weave. So we all did this. There was about 8 or 10 of us there. And we had a couple of Swiss guys there who were incredibly gifted. And we made our own cheese. And that's really easy to make. Cheese is so easy to make, guys. You just get a bucket, put a little tablet of rennet in it. You know, you've got to get unhomogenized milk. That's sort of hard probably to get. But actually my sister makes
rennet.
I beg your pardon?
You have to use rennet?
You can use a junket tablet, or you could probably also just sort of get a culture from a previous sort of milk, but then it goes into a curdle. I was so trippy. I read a book on Findhorn and about devas and everything. So one night I decided, right, that's it. I think I'll believe in devas. I'll pray to the deva of the yogurt. And the next morning I woke up and my bucket of milk had turned into yogurt, which, don't ask me, it just happened. Anyway, you just cut the yogurt up into, the milk up into pieces, and then you put it in a cheesecloth and you squeeze out the extra milk, which the chooks really like, and then you just put it in a cheese press and then you just sort of squash it. I think there's a few days waiting in between, but it's all terribly quick, you know, it's just like pressing flowers, but a bit harder. And then you just put it in the cupboard and you just turn it every, day and paint it with a bit of salt, and before you know it, you've got cheese. I mean, it's very easy to live off the grid in a lot of ways. And we had our own little brewery in one of the little tin sheds there. Like, so we had a blackberry plague, so we made our own blackberry wine, and we had honey because we had our own bees. And I forgot to mention tonight, Father Bob is a beekeeper, and that was he was a beekeeper. Yeah, we must get Bob back to talk about the joys of beekeeping with Barry McCann, a local beekeeper. Anyway, so, yeah, there's an awful lot. Like, it was just so easy. Like, you know, you just spin and weave, and it's not nearly as hard as you think to live this way.
No, it isn't. It was a bit of a shock to me, especially not having running water. That was a bit of a shock. But, you know, once you get over those shocks, you suddenly get a sense of achievement for being able to work your way around those supposed
problems. Well, this is the thing. We were very young, you know, like we were in our early 20s, and it was sort of like, you know, we head off and my girlfriend Janie, my old school chum Janie would say to me, water is the magic stuff, Jilly, and it's still my mantra. And we'd be carting these 2 and 4 gallon buckets of water to the veggie patch, just pouring it on. But boy, did we have veggies. Like, we made our own bread, and we didn't just make any bread. Like, we made heaps of different varieties of bread. And we even had this beautiful plaited Easter bread, called sutva. And I learned this really yummy recipe, which, because we made our own jam. And so we'd have like our own homemade bread, our own milk, our own butter, because we had a butter churn, which I grew up with a butter churn anyway. You know, it's really easy to make butter out of milk. You don't have to kill the calf if you've got enough. And not only that, there are actually these miniature goats that you can get these days that lots of people will take as pets. But that is the hardest part about getting milk. We really need to learn how to make tofu instead, I suppose. But back to the milk and we made our own cottage cheese, but we used to have this really yummy Swiss breakfast on a Sunday morning, because Heinchi, who called himself Salvador used to make this plaited Swiss bread, and then you'd have it with boiled eggs, cheese, blackberry jam, and curry, I think, and it was just delicious. Just imagine that, cheese and egg and jam, and we loved it. It is delicious, like these Swiss breakfasts, jam and egg, I think. It's pretty wild, but anyway, it was just delicious. Mm-hmm. We made our own curries, we made our own chutneys, everything. It's all easy to make, and you do it in a group or with a few people, and we had kids. I mean, I didn't have kids, but some of the other people had kids, and we just used to plonk them there on the table in the midst of it all, and off we went. It's not hard to live off the grid, but then again, you do need community.
Yeah,
but we were a communal house, you know, like there was 8 or 10 of us. Like, these guys had it really sorted.
The main thing is the water supply, as far as I could see.
Yes, water is the magic stuff. But you're in the desert in Taos, Barbie.
Yeah, it was high desert, so very...
You know, not a lot of water.
Not a lot of water at all, and the whole landscape is just sagebrush and rattlesnakes.
Oh, my God.
And groundhogs.
Did you see a rattlesnake? Did you hear
yes,
one?
Yes, we had a rattlesnake on the balcony. Rattlesnake. And every October they have the running of the tarantulas, so the entire high mace has these thousands, is overrun by thousands of tarantulas on the hunt for love. And, yes, there's a lot of, I saw some tarantulas as well, which are beautiful spiders, but, yeah, quite amazing sort of, natural wonders.
Did you get up and start singing La Cucaracha, La Cucaracha when the rattlesnake started rattling?
Their rattles are quite extraordinary. You think that they're not, that they're a man-made thing. They're so plastic, like Bakelite almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're extraordinary. Anyway, I love the whole experience.
On a rattlesnake?
Oh, the rattlesnake was fine. They're not very aggressive snakes, and you know they carry that rattle to let you know where they are. So everybody just runs in the other direction.
That's their many shedding of the skins that doesn't come off at the end of their tail, and they just accumulate over the years, and they rattle more and more.
Wow! Thank you, Stephen.
You didn't know that, huh?
No.
Yes, that's all they are. They don't. Every year they shed another skin and it doesn't, it just clips off down at the end and they keep, I'm sorry?
No, so that's how the rattle grows. That's how they rattle. Fascinating.
Yes, it is.
I quite like those. I love all animals, but I particularly like the rattlesnake. Thought they were really cool. And the children run around the mesa without a care in the world. You know, they just know that, you know, they usually have a dog or two with them. But, that was one of the first things you're told. If you hear the rattle, just go in the other direction and you'll be fine.
So where were you at down there in New Mexico?
Pardon me?
Where were you at in New Mexico?
I was about between 20 and 30 miles away from Taos. On the, it's called Two Peaks Mesa and it's,
Okay.
Yeah, the Rio Grande, the beautiful Rio Grande, snaking through, and the hot springs.
Were you down there near a reservation?
And the Tiwa Indian Pueblo is outside. I went there quite a few times, just at the foothills, at the base of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. Just, I mean, spectacular sort of scenery, as well as being very harsh. It's just also very beautiful. And, of course, all that wonderful Indian and Spanish architecture, all the adobe buildings and everything, very beautiful as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yep.
Did they have many solar panels on their roofs, Barbie, or windmills?
Yes, lots of solar panels happening down there, and especially on the mesa. I learned, you know, if I wanted some sort of refrigeration, okay, that's another solar panel. If I wanted to run Medusa, that's another solar panel. So you just sort of measure everything you want in your home by the number of solar panels it's going to take to provide the energy to do that.
Did they have a lot of individual generators, or are they just had one big generator, or what?
Lots of people have generators, and they are for various things, but mainly people have got either propane to run their fridges and stoves, which we have, but I know my darling had a propane heater this winter, which made winter a whole lot easier than having to go out and find wood on the mesa, which is very scarce. There's people, you know, lots of ideas. The buildings that are half under the ground are very energy efficient. So you sort of, there's a earthship community in that area as well. So you learn things about the best techniques for energy consumption and storage, and finding out sort of the different things that actually really work the best.
Very, very.
A few cows, a few sheep, a few chickens.
I'd love to have had that there, but you've got to watch the coyotes and the mountain lions.
No, I was saying if I want to live off the grid here, a cow, a few sheep, a few goats, a few chickens, and put them out the back garden.
That sounds marvelous. There's no shortage.
How big's your back garden?
It's about a little bit bigger than a postage stamp.
Oh, they'll be thriving. They'll be able to dance and skip and
pygmy animals.
I'll be growing a few vegetables this year as well.
That's where the miniature animals came from. What do we call them here? We have these little cows. I'm sorry, I'm plugging my earphones in again. I've been searching for something. Those little Dexters. Those little miniature Angus sort of cattle, they are from, they're little miniature sort of Galloways from Ireland. those mini cows, because you can get all the milk you need out of them, and they're smaller, and yet they still have enormous udders. You all know what.
I just can't imagine this tiny little poor little cow dragging around this huge udder. That doesn't sound very nice. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know about it, whether it came from Ireland or not. I think there is some somewhere, but they're not. Most of the cows here are normal size cows, that yeah. I say, Frisians or something, you know, whatever they're called, you know.
The black and white one.
Yeah. But we're all trying to do all of that, in a sense. We can't achieve it all. I'm growing a few vegetables since last year. I'll be doing it again this year. And that's all thanks to some of Messi here on the radio station. He was doing a show telling us all how to grow our own food and what to do. And he also goes further into making tinctures and medicines and various things from all the plants and the weeds that we have in our gardens. And it's fascinating stuff, you know.
I love that.
He's not on us at the moment. He's studying some other things at the moment. And, you know, but all the pods will be there and fascinating information. So he encouraged me to, and most of us, to start growing a few potatoes and carrots and whatever else, tomatoes and some berries, raspberries and strawberries and whatever you can do. We have Laurie in Scotland. She grows all her food in bags and things. You know, she doesn't actually have a garden as such.
Yeah.
So it's all part of, I suppose, trying to live off the grid in whatever way we can, you know.
As much as possible. What wonderful stuff. I think that's amazing to think that when you walk, about a year ago, I was enjoying finding out about supposed weeds that just grow on the side of the road. Things like cleavers that are fantastic for a spring cleanse of your kidneys and liver. And I'd be out there every day collecting armfuls of these weeds and putting them through my juicer and couldn't believe that, you know, I'd for ages been thinking, oh, I can't afford to get all that stuff from the health food shop that's going to keep me healthy. And then I did a little bit of research and find out it's all there for free. Go and pick up the nettles and the dandelion greens that are in your grass. And the thistles and all sorts of things, and put them through the juicer, and you'll be as healthy as all get out.
That's the kernel of it all, right? The nettles are fantastic. I can't remember all the other ones, but the ones that we call weeds that we all chop down and want to spoil our lawns and all this kind of stuff are the very things that will be keeping us alive at some stage.
And, I just sort of think they're blessings that are put there for us, and we're just ignorant. In our ignorance, we're just not aware of the bounty all around us.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's all there. It all comes from the earth. Nothing doesn't come from the sky. It comes from the earth. Everything we have, everything that we're, even the internet and the computers we're using, came from material from the ground, you know, and even Gillian's gold, you know. I think she's slipped off there. Is she back?
I'm trying to bring her back.
I think she's just trying to work out technology, probably. Or
well, yeah. I'm trying to bring her back. Her Skype just came back up, so she's.
So she might be fielding calls from fans.
Well, she's probably on the horn with her internet right now. Who knows?
Yeah.
This happened yesterday. It dropped off two or three times, and she was on the phone with the internet, and then she popped back up on, and I called her, and she was on both Skype and the telephone.
She likes she loves a good multitask.
Yes.
I was talking to her today for hours, and she blamed me for keeping her talking. And she said, "Will you come on tonight to talk to Bob?" I said, "What do you want me to say to Bob?"
Oh, she kept you up for a long, long time, didn't she, John?
Pardon?
I said, she kept you up till like 4 a.m., didn't she?
Oh, that was yesterday.
Poor job.
No, that was still today.
Wasn't a bother, really, you know. But I kept her up today till half time, 4 o'clock, I think it was as well. We went through a variety of subjects, as you do, similar to what we're talking about at the moment. But she wanted somebody Irish to come on and talk to Bob. And she asked me, did I know anything about St. Patrick? And... but unfortunately, her show was only an hour long. And, although Bob, it seems that you couldn't grab him for 2 hours or 3 hours, maybe some other time. He has an awful lot of stuff to talk about. So I said I'd leave it. Let's see how the interview goes and stuff, you know. But he's seemingly very interested in anything that's Irish for some reason. I don't,
Did we find out why that is? I was wondering whether he had Irish roots or whether
he has Scottish roots.
Uh-huh. Okay. He's a Celt at heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, so then that led me to talk to Gillian about Billy Maguire and that sort of historical kind of thing, you know. And we may be able to talk to Bob about all that sort of stuff at another stage, you know. Either me or through Jill or Stephen or through Vin or somebody, you know. Because he's a very interesting man. He's lively. It's great to hear what he has to say about the various things. It's a new take on things.
It is. He's very popular in the media out here. If people want to get an interesting take on whatever the social welfare subject might be, they call up Father Bob and he'll always have something interesting to say. So he's a much loved person in our community out here.
Yeah, I can see why. It's great to hear him. I hadn't heard of him until yesterday. And so that's the thing about this radio. You know, we hear of different things every day that we don't normally hear. And that's what we're about, I suppose. Alternative radio is to come up with things and meet people and new voices and new people from all over the world who have a similar take on things. And we just delve into particular subjects, probably a little bit deeper. And we're all on a learning curve. Every one of us are on a learning curve. So if you listen to the mainstream media, there's always got some professor about something, or you know, and they usually tell us a load of lies about something anyway, because they can't tell the truth, because they won't have their jobs if they actually tell the truth about history or various subjects. So what we have here in the alternative media, particularly with PIR, which used to be MSI and TNS, we have this wealth of knowledge, a wealth of backup podcasts from a variety of people who've been hosts and which cover the law, history, sovereignty, how to deal with law, how to deal with mortgage problems, how to grow your own food, how to make medicines, how to whatever, really, you know. And I just think it's a fantastic community. And everybody can participate, you know.
That's the wonderful thing about it. I did 10 years of community radio in a place called Byron Bay here in Australia, which is a very sort of alternative community in itself. And I got some offers to work in mainstream radio, and I just couldn't even begin to think about doing that because of the freedom that we have in community and internet radios, where you can really, you know, it's so real. No one's dictating to you what you have to talk about, what you have to play, and the voice of the people can be heard, which is fantastic.
Yep, absolutely. It's long overdue, in my opinion.
Yep. And you get such a sense of solidarity and that you actually can make a difference when you are able to speak to the communities and have the community speak to you and speak to the world through the station. And yeah. It's really exciting.
And also we find out how much we have in common. You know?
Isn't that right? Yeah.
And that basically everybody's just trying to get through life as best they possibly can.
Yeah.
And through TV and stuff has separated us, local communities, countries, peoples, races, everything. And it enables them to come up with all the racial hatred and division. Whereas if you have those two chaps on last night with Dr. Rock, and they go over to the Philippines. And one lad, he was talking about being in Thailand and Bali and his experience there going over to help people. And in the Philippines, and he's trying to get, he has a container full of tools, I think, that he wants to get into the Philippines. But the Red Cross or somebody governing all these charities, they're not a registered charity, are stopping them from bringing in this container full of stuff that the people need in order for them to redo things and all. It was fascinating to hear the two guys. And they don't do it for money. They don't, you know, they just do it because they want to do it. And that's what one thing that I'm finding myself is that the people who are the radio here are people who just want to do it. And they don't want to do it for any gain except to impart some sort of knowledge or focus on a different way of thinking, you know.
That's lovely. Darling, so I'm going to have to hit the frog and toad. I've got really got to get a wriggle on now and get some work done. So I look forward to talking to you next time.
It's great talking to you, Barbara.
And you too, John. Thank you so much. Are you still there, Stephen?
Yes, I am. Don't worry about it.
Oh, thank you, darling. All right. Well, I love you and leave you and look forward to our next time together.
Go clean the house, huh?
God bless. Okay. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good night. Well, John, unless Jill gets back up on Skype here, going to meet me and you for a little bit here.
No problem. No problem. I probably gave Jill a headache talking too much.
I don't know about that. Her Skype's dropped out. She's
yeah, it was dropping a lot today as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been dropping a lot here lately. I mean, not just today and yesterday, but over the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah. I've heard you speak about it, all right. There seems to be some, I don't know whether it's anything going on. It's just a signal. It's kind of like while we're trying to get away from the grid, where the grid is essential to us to do what we do. And I think we'd all be lost now without the internet.
Yeah.
And Skype and everything. We would be, I don't know what we would do then. We'd have to start writing to each other. That would take some time, seeing some things to do. But we'd have to find some other ways of communicating. And but there's always a way, isn't there? There's always somebody that has a good idea on how to do things. That's why we're here. Particularly one individual who set all this up in the first place. So that's where we are, where we will be in a few years' time, who knows. But we've got to make the best of what we have at the moment, and I think that's, it's incumbent upon us all to try and tell people about what it is we're about and what we do, you know, and get those solutions out to people in order for them to stem the anxiety and the fear factor that's flowing around the world at the moment.
I think she's back now, John.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, a ghost.
I'm haunting you. You will be very scared.
Welcome back, Jill. We were just talking about you.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Time to slash my wrists, then.
Yeah, grand. Not a problem.
I'm not quite ready to talk yet. Can you guys keep talking without me for a while?
Certainly. Sure. Are you still on the horn with your internet provider?
Yeah, all's well. I'll be back in a minute. I'm just sorting stuff out. Hang on.
That's okay. Just go ahead and mute.
I've sorted. Everything's perfect.
All right.
I'll be back in a tick. Thanks.
All right. So what are you going to talk about tomorrow, John?
I have no idea yet.
No idea yet, huh?
Probably more of the same. I might concentrate tomorrow night on the eviction attempt during the week and stuff like that, you know?
Uh-huh. That was Thursday, wasn't it?
Pardon?
That was Thursday, wasn't it?
Wednesday, I think.
Oh, Wednesday, okay.
Wednesday, yeah.
It looks like we're losing Jill again.
Oh, dear. Yeah, Wednesday, we had an exciting day on PIR. We had the eviction, which is kind of, I don't mean exciting in that sense, but while it was going on, and everybody, you were sort of hanging on by the fingernails, waiting for something to happen, you could feel the tension. Engross yourself in totally in the middle of it. You could feel the anxiety for those people that were involved in it. You could, the tension was palpable for me anyway. And everybody frantically trying to put messages out on Facebook to all their friends, and reposting things and doing, everybody was reposting to everybody and sending out messages that was live. And, I was talking to Vian earlier briefly. And I was saying to him, is it wrong really to be, not wrong, but letting people know there's an eviction on and we're broadcasting it live on PIR radio? And I said, it's kind of felt in a way that we're advertising the radio, but it is essential that we get it out there when it is happening. It's a kind of a double-edged sword in that respect.
Right. Do you know what the, section of the, Constitution that keeps the sheriff or the, guardy from busting in there and evicting somebody?
Yeah, it's 40.5 or either 40.1.1 or 40.5. Haven't got it in front of me, but I can have it off by heart. It's, a man's dwelling is inviolable, save in accordance with law.
Yeah. I imagine there would have to be something over here in America that would be very similar, wouldn't there?
There has to be. I mean, I think the founding fathers there, were fairly, meticulous in the drafting of the Constitution of America, you know? And the proclamation here in Ireland, originally would have sort of taken, bits of each constitution of various countries, I suppose, and put them into what is now known as one of the, best written documents ever for any, nation or budding nation. The constitution is a slightly different thing. But the proclamation would have been, the forerunner and where everything else would come from. But it clearly states in it that unless there's a crime, what it means is inviolable actually means sacred and sacrosanct and, precious and all of this sort of thing. If there is inviolable kind of covers all of that. It's not a word that we hear commonly in our language. We don't use it very well or often, or I never heard of it before, but that's what it is. It means it's sacrosanct and sacred.
Sorry.
All right, Jill.
Yeah, I'm all right, but, oh, God, hang on a minute. No, I'm not.
She was going to interrupt you, but then she couldn't.
Yeah, so basically, unless a crime has been committed in the home, they have no powers unless they believe there's a crime.
Or some criminal just ran into your home or something like that.
Yeah, but the thing about evictions or ejectments and repossessions, whatever they like to call them. Some of them aren't even eviction orders, they're ejectment orders, which is a different in terminology and different in meaning as well, apparently. And that eviction thing and ejectment and repossessions is a civil matter. It's not a criminal matter.
Sure, certainly, yeah.
You know, so there's a huge difference. But it's basically the state or branches of the so-called state being given instructions and utilizing the Gardaí in a capacity of hirelings or something and hire them out for the day to go and make sure that the criminality that is being committed by the sheriff and his cohorts and the locksmiths is particularly not seen by the Gardaí, but to make sure that those people are safe while they extract people from their homes. And yeah, there was 9 Gardaí there the other day, apparently. 9. And I was talking to a shopkeeper today, and he has been a victim of a couple of robberies lately. And there is no local Gardaí around. They may be only taking them all out of the stations, and they have to come from another jurisdiction to handle anything. But yet, 9 Gardaí can be employed or hired to go and observe a repossession or an eviction. So beggars belief how this all works out, Steve. I don't know how all this comes about. That when somebody is actually in peril or there is a crime being committed, in some circumstances now, the way they have it structured, the Gardaí aren't available. They can't even get there. They do eventually, not that they don't. So 9 of them can go and try and observe some private security company who's being hired by the sheriff or the under-sheriff or to extract people, families and children from their home over a civil matter to do with a banking system. And that in itself to me is criminal. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what reasonings they have or what logic that they have. It is totally against all, everything that anybody should be standing for. And we're not going to stand for it. And I'm not going to stand for it personally. And I'll do whatever it is that I have to do.
Well, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think there has to be something wrong with people's brains or their heads. Especially here in America, where they get, where they are given a badge and they are told that they have all these special powers and they virtually don't have any, no power over us. But they can't be told this. They've got it indoctrinated into their head that they do.
Yeah, well, exactly. But if we give them that power, you see, this is the whole thing. The attempt the other day failed because they didn't give them subject matter jurisdiction. They didn't recognize them, and because a crime wasn't committed in that home, nobody broke into it to pull them out of it, which is a very important event that has actually happened. It's a lesson for everybody to learn that actually they don't do it. If you don't, by not speaking to them and by not communicating with them, you're not there. If they choose to break in and do that sort of stuff, which they didn't the other day, for whatever reason. So the lesson, I think, is that if those people, if Ben Gilroy was there, lucky enough, how he gets to these places all the time, I don't know. But he just spirits himself to these places. And, you know, it's amazing to have somebody like him around who's able to take his time out, leave, drop everything and just go to these when he finds out about these things. And apparently, Vin only found out about it a few seconds before, or a few seconds or minutes after Ben Gilroy found out about it, you know. And then the wheels are put in motion and everybody, bit by bit, people are learning about it as they go along. And then we try to get that information out as fast as we can and in whatever way we possibly can. A lot of people were trying to get there. Then we had to find out where it was. And it's another double bind. You're trying to keep people's privacy, but you're going public about where it's happening. And, you know, you have to be very careful about all these things. But thankfully, I think the people who went there were just very passive. Ben was in the house, from what I can gather. He was in the house and he was communicating from the house. And then other people arrived. So those people didn't communicate, I don't think, with the Gardaí. The Gardaí were knocking on the window or the door. And there was no communication from the people in the house with them. And that's a huge lesson to learn. And that we've been saying it all along. And people say, oh, that's okay saying it until you put it into practice. But it was put into practice the other day and it worked. Now, when the sheriff is going to come back or not, but as far as I know, and I could be corrected on this, the fact that the sheriff and his cohorts go to a particular thing to do to this order, so-called order that they receive, and whether they're successful or not successful, they have to start out the process all over again. They can't just come back a few hours later or the next day or whatever. It has to be done at that particular day. If it's not done to any status, I think, as far as I know, I could be wrong there, but they have to start the whole thing over again in order for another order, because that order was carried out. They arrived, they didn't get through because of whatever. And it's probably that the fact that the Constitution is protecting the people, more likely. And there was no communication. If you communicate with these people, you're opening the door by even speaking to them through a door.
You're a pack of anarchists. That's all I know. I'm thinking you're a bunch of criminals now.
Who's a pack? Who's a pack of anarchists?
And now I've discovered that Billy Maguire's daughter might be have been having an affair. Is there any truth in this?
So what is that supposed to mean, Jill? What's that got to do with anything?
Billy Maguire doesn't have a daughter, so that couldn't be possibly true.
Well, that's good.
Yes, so but what would that have to do with anything, though? Steven? So, what would that have to do with anything, though, Jill?
Well, you sent me the cutting. Or somebody sent me this piece of information that said Danielle Maguire, the former girlfriend of drug boss Tony Mopbell. And so I was thinking, oh, what? It's a criminal family. What's she doing with that criminal?
Don't even know who you're talking about.
Oh, well, I'm rather pleased. I don't think it's his daughter, but I thought for a minute it was the daughter of one of our famous personalities who we've been speaking with today.
Yeah, no. Billy Maguire doesn't have any family like that. And those people that you're reading from, which country are they from, Jill?
Apparently, well, I don't know. Look, I got sent this, so I assumed that it was some relation.
Okay. I get you, yeah, I understand, yeah. You just tied one thing into the other because the name was familiar, similar.
Well, it was sent to me. So, like, I'm talking, it was sent to me at the point at which I was talking about Bingo Maguire. Yeah, yeah. Do you know anything about this, Stephen?
No, I don't, nope.
Well, how come you sent me the link?
I sent you
on
the link.
Danielle Maguire, yeah, you sent me a message about...
When?
Oh, earlier on. Oh, it doesn't matter. Anyway, look, let's move on quickly. We do not want to run into wherever we're going. We'll go back
to... No, it's okay. It's not a problem at all.
The link I sent you was a picture, Jill.
I beg your pardon?
The last link I sent you was a picture.
No, it's not necessarily the last link, Stephen, but anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll talk about it off air. We'll sort it out later. Or, well, you can just say you didn't send it to me and I'll say okay. I don't really care.
Hey, John. John.
Yeah, go ahead.
Vibe doesn't want to come on, but she said you could tell about the time a bunch of the guardian, the sheriff, and came to her house.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She should really be coming on and talking about that.
Yeah, again. She said she didn't want to, though.
She's chickening out again.
I guess.
Come on, Vibe, you know. She probably knows. She's nearly as bad as Jill. Her internet keeps coming and going.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, she had experience of that. I didn't know Vibe at the time, but there was something like 30 Gardaí and an armed unit went to
a dog house. Unit.
No, with guns, you know.
Yeah.
What did they call them? Rapid response team or some bloody thing like that, you know.
SWAT team?
Well, not quite a SWAT
That's
team.
That's what they call them over
American,
here.
In the American sense, you know. But they were there with guns, and there was 30 Gardaí in all, and the sheriff and his thugs and a few others there. But fortunately enough, there was about 20 or 30 people at least there talking to them or, you know, making a stand, really, and it was sorted out eventually. We did get the call out on the radio.
That 33.
In that area. Pardon?
33, she just said.
33, yeah. Vin says he didn't go in because he only had 30 cops.
Yeah. Wouldn't have been fair, would it?
And someone else says 23. I'd have to explain to foreign listeners that 33.
You
don't say three in Ireland. Because the reason we say three, it sounds like T-R-E-E is yes. Because in the great Irish language,
13.
Three, T-H-R-E-E, is spelled T-R-I, fodder, which is three.
13, right?
And 13,
what
yeah.
were they doing? What was an armed response unit and a helicopter and 30 people? 30.
No, we did get a helicopter. We weren't that posh.
Oh.
That's only in Hollywood movies you get helicopters. We only have one or two helicopters in Ireland.
Vibe had one over her house.
it says here, it says a chopper, an armed
response. Yeah, it was her. A rally chopper.
You guys, I just don't know what to make of you anymore. I'm starting to think I might be mixing with the wrong kind of people.
I'm reading the chat box, and there's someone put up, there's a bit of messing going on.
There was a chopper, if you're reading it.
I'm very sorry about that, Vibe. I didn't know there was a chopper myself. That's the first I heard about that. But there you go. You see, you learn something new every day. You come on this radio station. There's always something new to learn. And I was just looking at the chat box there, and... some of Messi is up to his little mischief again, you know. It's quite funny.
There was a purple rally chopper. is this a joke? Am I falling for it? And there was a rally grifter. And the cops were riding them.
And a little purple leprechaun, too.
And Fergie's little budgie was in there, too.
But on a serious part of all that, while we're all having a bit of laugh and everything else now, that we can laugh at it now, I suppose. But at the time, it was a very severe thing for a Vibe to be going through. She was lost. She didn't know what to do. She had tried different avenues to handle the situation that she was in. And she was getting advice from different people, which were in the free man movement, I suppose. And there was sort of letters, I think, going backwards and forwards and all this kind of stuff. And... it took an awful lot out of her, and which it would anybody. And she was in a considerable state by the time all this came about. And it just so happened through, I suppose you could call it fate or something. I don't know what you call it. She found out about someone here on the radio station and spoke to that person and was given different instructions as to what to do and all the rest of it. Just in the nick of time, I would say, really. And the radio was used to call out to people. A lot of people attended, whoever could get there, got there, and it was all sorted out eventually. And she's still there. And
what was she doing? Sitting on the sofa breastfeeding her baby or something? Like, how did you
know? No, someone messy wasn't there. That's gone over your head, I know, but somebody in the chat box will get that.
I know who was there. I've heard the story.
So, yeah.
She says with such arrogance. Sorry. I mean, I know who was there. I think I might know who was there, is how I should say it. Yeah, go on.
So, yeah, it was very serious, and it always is very serious. There's no doubt about it. And it was a terrible time for Vibe, and she got through it. And as I say, I suppose the moral of that story is be careful of the information that you're giving out to people, because it's not always the correct information, but it goes back to the attempt that was made during the week, which the correct information was given out to people. And because the correct information was given out to people, it actually worked in the manner that it should work. And it's very important for people to understand that and to know and learn of it. And in fact, all of these solutions are so simple that they're so simple that they're very hard to grasp.
Yes, way too simple for me to grasp, but I'm working on it.
Well, I wasn't talking about you now, Jill, although I usually
am. Oh, God. Poor old Narcissus didn't get to insinuate himself into the middle of it.
No, every time I say something like that, I am including myself in it, Jill. I've told you this before. Like us all, it's very hard to grasp the simple, because we've lived in a complicated system for people who want to make things so complicated that you have to pay a lot of money for a complication, because that's what they want to make it, you know, that they make a living out of complicating things. But we're very fortunate to have people who have studied all this kind of thing and have come up with, through a variety of ways and trial and error, come up to the points of where the solutions that we have are at. And all we need to do is get people to know about them and get people to act on them in the way that they should be acting upon them, including myself.
And we have somebody here, John.
Good.
Hi, Vibe.
Everybody run.
Everybody run. Oh, goodness.
Oh, my God. It's the criminal. The criminal. I'm mixing with the criminal. What am I going to do? Run away. Run away. Hi, Vibe.
Yeah, you see, I didn't keep the solution simple, so I was stupid. As I have said a couple of times on a show. Vin kept correcting me, but I kept saying, no, keep it simple, stupid. And it should have been keep it stupid, simple, but there you go. But yeah, there was over 33 members of An Garda Síochána Conor that day. But you see, the story had led from me looking into the free man stuff, and I've said it a few times on air. You know, and the money that, the Dublin City Council, the local corporation that rents out the houses that I'm in, Dublin City Council is basically running the whole show here, regarding council housing. So, I was a long story, but I'll keep it short as I can. There had been fraud on Dublin City Council's part, and they added €3,000 onto the rent. And when I questioned it, I was propositioned by one of the staff members, an elderly man on board, of Dublin City Council, and told he would get rid of the bill if I was to give him a phone call and meet up with him. I declined, and so he went and put the €3,000 on my rent. The €3,000 came from a hotel bill, which they had put me up in because, there was a lot of antisocial behaviour in the place I had lived in before. So this was all going on, and I was questioning this money and the bill for a couple of years, and nobody was listening to me. So I was looking at the free man stuff and sending letters to the law agent in Dublin City Council for a while, and he was writing back, and I went to court and I didn't go. And so, I got notification then that the sheriff was coming to evict me. So this was all very, very stressful leading up to this, and I didn't know which way to turn. I'd been writing to the Attorney General, and she told me to basically sod off and go and get a solicitor. So the Attorney General's letter was maybe a week before the eviction was supposed to come about. And so I didn't know which way to turn. I was listening to an old friend of mine, and he was telling me to, you know, we'll do it this way and we'll fight them off and all of this. There is a couple of YouTube videos up of it. And, but I made a phone call the night before the eviction and got a hold of Vin and Ben Gilroy and explained to them what happened. And that morning of the eviction, Ben and Vin had got a group of around 25 people to support me and told me I was to stay in the house, explained to me about the constitution, and stay in the house, not open the door, and that's what I done. And they all had it off, but the response from Dublin City Council was unbelievable. And the guards just kept coming and coming and coming. They were blocked off the road. The buses couldn't come up the road. I've got a primary school right around the corner from me. All the parents couldn't get in off the main road to collect their children. There was so much disruption. And all my neighbours thought it must have been a gun runner. That was the news that was being spread on the buses. I live in a small area which have a lot of old people. I'm probably one of the youngest families on this road. It's a real old neighbourhood.
Is this just because you're a bit behind in your mortgage? Is this what this was about?
It wasn't a mortgage, Jill. I rent weekly from the local council.
So because you were behind in your council rent, they brought helicopters and squads in it.
yeah, exactly. Well, it wasn't only that, Jill. You see, my frame of mind was with the free man stuff, and I was sending letters, threatening letters, and telling the law agent, Dublin City Council, that I was going to put a commercial lien on him, and I would have his house next year, and all of this stuff. You know, which is ridiculous. But I assumed this was going to happen, and this was the advice I was being given, and I had nothing to worry about. But it actually hit me about 2 days before the sheriff actually arrived, and I realised I was probably going to be evicted, and that was it. And I jumped in the car and I went over to a housing estate where there was a lot of houses that hadn't been finished, and I was looking in the windows and saying, okay, well, I'm going to have to pack everything up, put everything into storage. I'll come over here, and myself and Aoife will stay here, and I'll sleep on the floor, and I'll just do it until I find something else, because I didn't know what else to do until, you know, I was told about Vin and Ben, and that's when I rang them then. They calmed me down. They explained everything to me, and that was it. You know, I'm still here. That was like 2 years ago, and I'm still here. But the stress over that, over a hotel bill that was supposed to be paid by Dublin City Council, but because your man had his own ideas from him and myself, he decided that if I didn't pay, it was going to be put on the rent where it shouldn't have been. And when I went to a meeting then after the eviction with Dublin City Council, because you see, at that time. At that time, that man I was dealing with had retired, and he was very, very ill. And when I went in and explained all this to them, they were in shock, you know. They said to me, no, it wasn't a hotel bill. You were walking. But I said I had sent in all the forms. You knew exactly what wages I was on. I was paying that wages. My wages were 70 euros a week, and that's what I was paying. But the 3,000 euros that was added on was from the hotel bill. But they disputed that. They said, no, it's not. But I had documented evidence to state that, yeah, the 3 grand came from the hotel bill. So I was telling them it was fraud on the man's part and you know, what he'd been saying to me, and it was totally out of order. And then the reception they put on outside my door, you know, I had TV reporters from TV3. I had 6 news reporters from different, papers, because there was so much destruction outside my house that morning in question. They were there for a few hours. And, you know, all my neighbors from around the estate didn't know what was going on. So they all headed off then later on. Yeah, there was a dog unit, the armed response unit. There was a helicopter flying over, and there was Gardaí arriving. There was two sergeants and a superintendent. And
did they think you were? Did they just think you were an anarchist?
Probably. I mean,
they decided to bully you, and then their bullying just had to get bigger and bigger and bigger because you stood your ground, and so they just kept.
Well,
was at the other end.
Well, I've been questioning their stance, Dublin City Council's stance on them owning the land. And the questions I had been putting into the letters that I was sending to the law agent, I was questioning them and questioning that had the Crown got something to do with this. So, you know, not all of the letters had a lot of Freeman stuff in it. You know, there was a lot of good questions that I had put to them, you know, regarding their ownership of the land and who they think they are, and you know, putting this pressure on a mother and a child. And I wanted them to send me evidence that they owned the land that I was living on.
They responded in ancient royal fashion. Kill the bastard.
Yeah.
We got our power by brute force, so they just resorted to brute force.
Yeah.
How hilarious. Yes, yeah. We own the land. We're the biggest bullies.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Wow. Yeah. So that was my incident with that. But I was up and I was really, really, you know, I was fit to be tired, really, you know, and I was completely exhausted. You know, it took me a couple of visits out to Baldy there. He thinks he's having a great laugh in the chat box there. And the other fella, it took me a couple of visits to speak with Doug and Vin, and they explained to me. They explained to me basically what was going on, you know, and explained to me that the Freeman's route wasn't the best way, the best route to go down and to come away from that. And, you know, and I slowly but surely came around to, the information about sovereignty and all of that. So, yeah. Yeah. I probably still would have been doing the Freeman route if I hadn't have been, for MSI Radio.
Oh my God, and I didn't even know what's going on. I'm just here thinking you're a lot of very lovely, special.
Well, it was TNS Radio at that time, wasn't it, Ruth?
It was TNS at the time, yeah, sorry, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you know, and I'm sure Dublin City Council, the managers in there hadn't a clue what was going on, you know. They didn't know what to expect when I went into the meeting. You know, I was throwing the constitution at them on the table, and not even understanding fully what I was doing. Thanks, Coach. I'm saying how we can't shut me up.
don't shut her up. She's just shut. You've just achieved an enormous feat anyway. You shut up, Johnny.
So that's what happened in my situation anyway. I just thought I'd come in and share that with just So I'll bow out now before I get slagged even more on the chat box.
Well, there we are. There we're
not, no, you stay there. I can run away because I'm out of my depth here.
I think I'm going to go ahead and end this anyways. I've had a long day and it's been a long show.
Cool. Well, no bother. Well, thanks for dragging me in. And I'll talk to you later, guys.
Thanks for coming, Ruth.
Have a good night, Ruth.
Not at all. No, lads.
See you,
bye.
Thank you for coming, Johnny. And Stephen Roberts, thank you for being my friend and hosting me and looking after me. And I'm going to take Father Bob Maguire's advice and thank the workers even more. Stephen Roberts, Council of the Cabal. Wow. Thank you.
People's Internet Radio.
Oh,
Australia
and
Internet Radio. And April Rain's We Roar Radio.
I didn't thank them. My show finished ages ago.
Yes, I know, but we're still on it.
Yes.
Well, April Rain's, it's not that you was thanking them. I was.
Oh, sorry.
All right, everyone.
Radio, you're hot.
Yeah, this is the end of the show here. Had a long day. So, till next Wednesday, everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal. Good night, everyone.